Kinjaliha, Giant Radha Madhava, Kinjaliha, Giant Radha Madhava, Kinjaliha, Gopi Jana Ballabha, Giri Vrdha Radhi, Gopi Jana Ballabha, Giri Vrdha Gopi Jana Ballabha, Giri Vrdha Radhi, Gopi Jana Ballabha, Giri Vrdha Radhi, Jasar Nandana Bhaja Janirandana Nandana Bhaja Janirandana Jasar Nandana Bhaja Janirandana Jamuna Kiravana Chadhi Kiravana Yamuna Kiravana Chadhi Jaya Radha Madhava Kinjabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kinjabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Radha Madhava Gopi Jana Ballabha Giri Vrdha Radhi Gopi Jana Ballabha Giri Vrdha Radhi Gopi Jana Ballabha Giri Vrdha Radhi Nandana Bhajarandana Yasoda Nandana Bhajarandana Nandana Bhajarandana Jamuna Kiravana Chahi Jamuna Kiravana Jaya Radha Madhava Kinjabi Hari Madhava Kinjabi Jaya Radha Madhava Kinjabi Hari Madhava Jayo Vishnu Padma Mahamisa Parivitavacharya Ostapurasimat His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Gaura Premanand. I didn't catch the name of who dressed Radha Shyama Sundar, but the flowers are amazing, decorating the amazing, beautiful deity. Vijay Radha. Beautiful. Huh? You're agreeing. Something like that.
From
your home garden. Your own farm garden. I'm enjoying the decoration of the beautiful deities. I'm sure you enjoyed growing them. I'm sure they enjoyed being grown and being offered. One of those things that when you offer something that's produced from nature, that which the entity that produces that which is offered to Krishna gets spiritual benefit too. So bless your plants. Thank you for making a nice offering to the deity. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Text 33, right? Yes?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Na hyato nya shiva panta.
Na hyato nya shiva panta.
Vishata samsrita viha.
Vishata samsrita viha.
Vasudeve bhagavati.
Vasudeve bhagavati.
Bhakti yoga yato bhavet.
Bhakti yoga yato bhavet.
Na hyato nya shiva panta. Vishata samstrita viha.
Vishata samstrita viha.
Vasudeve bhagavati.
Vasudeve bhagavati.
Bhakti yoga yato bhavet.
Bhakti yoga yato bhavet.
Taha, beyond this, anyaha, any other, shevaha, auspicious, pantaha, means, vishataha, wandering, sangshritao,
in this material world,
iha,
in this life,
vasudeve, unto Lord Vasudeva Krishna,
unto Lord Vasudeva,
Bhagavati, the Personality of Godhead,
Bhakti Yoga,
direct devotional service, Yattaha,
wherein
Bhavet
may result in.
Translation for those who are wandering in this material, in the material universe. There is no more auspicious means of deliverance than what is aimed at in the direct devotional service of Lord Krishna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. as will be clarified in the next verse, devotional service or direct bhakti yoga is the only absolute and auspicious means of deliverance from the grip of material existence. There are many indirect methods for deliverance from the clutches of material existence, but none of them is as easy and auspicious as bhakti yoga. The means of jnana and yoga and other allied disciplines are not independent in delivering a performer. Such activities help one to reach the stage of bhakti yoga after many, many years. In the Bhagavad Gita 12.5, it is said that those who are attached to the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth are liable to many troubles in the pursuit of their desired goal. And the empiricist philosophers searching after the Absolute Truth realize the importance of Vasudeva realization as all in all after many, many births, 719 Bhagavad Gita. As far as yoga systems are concerned, it is also said in the Bhagavad Gita 647 that amongst the mystics who pursue the Absolute Truth, the one who is always engaged in the service of the Lord is the greatest of all. And the last instruction in the Bhagavad Gita 1866 advises fully surrendering unto the Lord, leaving aside all other engagements or different processes for self-realization and liberation from material bondage. And the purport of all Vedic literatures is to induce one to accept the transcendent loving service of the Lord by all means. Pretty complete paragraph. As already explained, in the texts of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, either direct bhakti yoga or the means by which ultimately, or the means which ultimately culminate in bhakti yoga without any tinge of fruitive activity, constitute the highest form of religion. Everything else, simply a waste of time for the performer. Shrama eva hi kevalam. Srila Sridhar Swami and all other acharyas like Jiva Goswami agree that bhakti yoga is not only easy, simple, natural, and free from trouble, but is the only source of happiness for the human being. The chapter is coming to a close, a few more verses, and let's just revisit what these first three chapters are responsive to. The first three chapters are responsive to the two questions at the end of chapter 19 of Canto 1. Shukadeva Goswami is being asked, what's the duty of one who's about to die, and what is that subject matter that one should hear, chant, remember always? And then the three chapters are taking one. The Maharaj Pariksit is certainly learned, so he doesn't need the introduction, but the introduction is there in chapter one for those of us that aren't learned, to explain meditation on the universal form, then meditation on the Paramatma feature, and meditation on the Bhagavan feature, or not just meditation upon, but engagement in devotional service to the personal feature. So this is the transition or preparing the way for the third chapter, devotional service, change in heart. And to repeat, there have been indirect methods discussed prior to this, each of the different divisions. Rather than reviewing those different divisions, Prabhupada is simply placing them in categories that are the standard categories. The Gyan process, the Dhyan process, and the Bhakti process. And naturally, the glories of Bhakti are in the foreground, because the verse is stating there is no more auspicious means, so Shiva, of deliverance than what is aimed at in the direct devotional service. In contrast, because it just says Bhakti Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, but Prabhupada is in the word for word and in the verse, it's direct, to stand distinct from indirect. Direct and indirect. It's similar to the Bhagavad Gita verse that we've been discussed a couple times during this visit in the evening classes. Yayatam mam prapadyante tangs tataiva pajamiham. Krishna is the object of everyone. And then in Prabhupada's, there's different ways of understanding that verse. And one of the ways, Prabhupada explains, is those who are the everyone refers to the aspirants for transcendence or the followers of the Vedas. And then of the followers of the Vedas, there are those that like this version or this approach, some like that approach, they have different disposition and a different consequence. By the indirect method, it is intended to lead to the direct method, but it may not, and that's what's in the purport. It's let's go through the examples. Well, the first thing that Prabhupada declares is that these other processes, specifically Gyan and Karma, doesn't mention Gyan, a Dhyan, but Gyan, yes, he does. The means of Jnana and Yoga, which is Dhyan, and other allied disciplines are not independent in delivering the performer. So the indirect methods are not independent, means they're dependent. So to leave out the word yoga, and there are people that meditate on something, materialists meditate on something, and aspiring spiritualists may meditate on something. But the process of meditation, when you include yoga to the word, or the explanation that we've received from Srila Prabhupada, it means there's some tinge or some degree of the presence of bhakti. That is, the presence of bhakti means service to the Supreme. As soon as bhakti word is there, it's service to the Supreme. Bhakti means service to the Supreme. Like this, Shadhavan Bhajate Yo Mam, the reference is in this purport. The topmost yoga uttama form of dhyan is where one is two things, Madgatenantaratmana. The mind is absorbed in Krishna, Madgatain Antaratmana, and Bhajate Yomam, Bhaj. I'm not a Sanskrit scholar by any means, but I know two or three things. And mainly it's what Prabhupada explains this, for example, the word, the dhatu of Bhaj means service. It's practical activity. Practical activity is distinct from withdrawing the senses from sense objects. That's the indirect method. In the meditation process, pratyahara means withdrawing the senses from sense objects. And then meditation within, Dhyan Dharana Samadhi. But bhaj means practical activity, extending the senses into the object of the senses, the field of prakriti, and engaging prakriti in the service to the Supreme. So this is para-bhakti. But supposing it's just so. Because those who are jnanis or jnan yogis, and those who are dhyan yogis, they also have to do some practical activity. Have to do some, just to sustain the body, they have to do some practical activity. Some part of their life, if not part of their day. So then how do you engage in relation to the Supreme? Some element of attaining the Supreme through practical activity. Because dhyan, or the cessation of extending the senses into the field of activity, is withdrawal. It's the practical activity is now within. It's the mind, that which is also an activity. But that directing that activity to what? Or directing the mind to what? Then it depends on the conception that one has. So those that have that conception, Krishna's indication, the end of chapter 6, Arjuna, by all means be a yogi, and the best of all yogis is the bhakti yogi, with these two, mind and body. What you do with the mind, what you do with the body, that's the highest. So supposing, and that's the independent method, or the direct method, or para-bhakti method, that's recommended in this verse of the Bhagavatam, and similarly in the Bhagavad Gita. So, in a little checklist, Prabhupada is making references to passages from Bhagavad Gita, statements by the topmost authority, Krishna, in the different yoga systems. So, klesho dikritarashtesham avyakta sapta chetasam. There's lots of those who are trying to bring their attention to the unmanifest. There's lots of trouble. That's the reference. In Bhagavad Gita, those who are attached to the impersonal, they're liable to many troubles in the pursuit of their desired goal. Then in the path of Gyan, many, many, many births, and there's no guarantee, you just follow that many, many, many births process, there's no guarantee that you're going to stay with it. And if one does stay with it, and if one is successful in it after many, many births, then one comes to the bhakti conclusion, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, and then they surrender. Prabhupada made Krishna consciousness so simple for the simple, and there's details, and there's more details, and there's more details for those that like details. But the very simple, we all know. If someone is told to touch their nose, there's the direct method, and then there's the indirect method, and it's troublesome. I mean, it's doable. But the end is the same, you touch your nose. So you can do it indirectly or you can do it directly. So the dhyan process or the yoga process, dhyan yoga process, or the gyan yoga process, they're indirect and they're troublesome. And there's no guarantee that one's going to cross the finish line because there's lots of distractions, especially in this age. It's like abundant, too much disturbance and distractions. And the last instruction in Bhagavad Gita is let go of all these other processes and just take this one process. Take shelter of Krishna. And then finally, and the purport of all Vedic literatures is to induce one to accept the transcendental loving service of the Lord by all means, which is a way of saying that the purpose behind all the Vedas is this one purpose. Now, persons that don't know the purpose can get lost in the forest of so many options. And when you start with any option, I don't know if you've had the same experience as I have, but you try to understand something with the Vedas, you know, this topic or that topic or some other topic. And it's like, my experience is, it's like plunging into the ocean and finding it's an ocean that has no bottom. Just keep going and going and going and going and going. And gosh, it's so involved and so complex. And you keep going and going, and it's still more involved and more complex. And those that have brahminical capacity, you know, capacity to remember things, like some people have, they can explain things in detail, in detail, in detail, in detail. Jiva Goswami explains something very nicely on this particular point in Tattva Sandarbha. In Tattva Sandarbha, he explains that what the work of Vyasadeva in compiling the Vedas was for Kali Yuga folks. Knowing that in Kali Yuga, people aren't going to understand the purpose of the Vedas, so what are they going to do? Get confused. And so to help them, he divided the one Veda into four. And he gives a very nice explanation of what that exercise was. He uses a metaphor. Supposing a king has a treasury. And what he did was he went to the king's treasury and he put the diamonds over here and the rubies over there, the emeralds over there and the miscellaneous over there. He took the vastness of the Vedas and made it departmentalized. Whereas in previous ages, the brahmanas just went to the treasury box and they knew which mantras to pick for which purpose. They didn't need it separated because their comprehension and their memory retention was so vast. And they knew. And in the age of Kali, people don't have that same. And so for that purpose or that method, he divided the Vedas into four. Diamonds over here, rubies over there, emeralds over there, miscellaneous over there. And then with that, the vast portion of that is dealing with people who in this Bhumandala region, they have fruitive intention, and so the vast part deals with karmakanda rituals. And then some persons are a little smaller, very small percentage, have some interest in going beyond karmakanda fruits and doing it in auspicious ways. So then the Gyankanda section, smaller slice. But they, the karmakanda and Gyankanda section of the Vedas, as part of the Vedas, have the same purpose as the bhakti message, the direct method. So the indirect methods are meant by design, A, fulfill desire for fruit of gain, or B, gain knowledge of that which is beyond fruitive intentions, or Brahman, and eventually take one to the bhakti position. And they're not independent to deliver one. That's the message of this verse. And the others, indirect method, they help bring one to that position. That's the intention. The difficulty is people don't know the purpose and they become attached to whatever it is. That Bhaktivinoda Thakur's example is persons walking on a staircase, and if you stop on this stair, then you're identified as a practitioner of this. But the progressive person is always aspiring for what's next and what's next and what's next. And so they're progressive if that's the indirect method. But many people aren't progressive, and therefore they're identified according to the step on the yoga ladder or the yoga staircase. And then especially recommended for this age, but of course the Bhagavatam is for us in this age, because the age is transitioning from Krishna's age to the Kali age. So it's for us, but it's true regardless of age. And the others that had capacity could do other things and reach the bhakti stage, depending upon contact with someone that is carrying bhakti, and then they can keep moving. You know, at least the choice is there, the option is there, the awakening of a higher destination and higher means to reach that destination is there. So just two more short paragraphs. As already explained in the texts, plural, of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, either direct bhakti yoga or the means which ultimately culminate in bhakti yoga, comma, without any tinge of fruitive activity, small thing, right? Without any tinge of fruitive activity. That's a challenge for the living entities to take birth in Bhumandala, because this is the middle planetary region where fruitive activities is the way of life, the place of passion, where fruitive activities drives everybody. Now supposing when it doesn't have attraction for fruitive activity, you're going to have attraction for something, so then there's upper and there's lower, but the persons in this realm, it's the thing. Everyone to take birth in this realm, particularly now human species, it's a big deal. It's the fuel that drives the machine, fruitive activity. So those who take the indirect process, whether the goal is prospering in this world and the next, or the carrot is getting release from this bondage and going to a life where there's no bondage, the liberation, moksha, desire, beyond fruitive activity, constitutes the highest form of religion. So the direct or the indirect. The indirect can take one to that with the dependence upon the bhakti principle, which means no fruitive activity. Or the upkama. Because as long as there's kama, then there's fruitive activity, bondage. Everything else is simply a waste of time for the performer. Well, unless they somehow contact bhakti and then incorporate bhakti in their life. Otherwise, as far as the purpose of the Vedas is concerned, it's a waste of time. Like, that's pretty strong, isn't it? That's really strong. So that's the Bhagavatam. It's a waste of time. Now, waste of time, one can look down upon other people. That's not what we should do. You're wasting your time. I mean, just like we heard Gaur Hari's, Prabhupada's visit to the Morning Star Ranch. What are you doing? Picking potatoes. What are you doing with your life? So, don't waste your time. Don't waste this valuable human form of life. Or, positively, find real happiness. Because otherwise, Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam, there's no happiness. Finally, Srila Sridhar Swami and all the other acharyas like Jiva Goswami agree that bhakti yoga there's several features. Easy, simple, natural, and free from trouble. Okay, so you all should know that your life should be free from trouble because you're doing Bhakti Yoga, right? And then if you're getting trouble, there's something wrong with the Bhakti process, right? Because, like somebody was asking yesterday, I'm not feeling I'm making progress. I was thinking some more about that question. I feel like I'm not making progress. Is there something wrong with the process, or something wrong with how we're applying ourselves to the process? Or do we have our anchors down while rowing the boat? Are we attached to the temporary while applying ourselves to the bhakti process? So this is the bhakti in different, so many different ways. Bhakti Siddhanta likes this one, so give some reference. We should look within. This the introspective bhakta looks within. What's holding me back? What is it that I'm attached to? And you start looking through the lens of scripture, what I'm attached to, and you'll find lots of stuff. Or because I just gave this nice seminar, a seminar on this nice writing of Raghunath Das Goswami, his path is an internal path, and he looks inside. He's advising, he's instructing his mind, which means he's instructing us to instruct our mind to look within and see stuff. And, you know, this variety, that variety, the other variety, and sub-varieties of those varieties, because that's what's holding us back. So the cleansing, it happens naturally, one can say. The abhadras, or anarthas, or different terms, the unwanted things, have the potency of bhakti is there to cleanse those things. And does it happen automatically? If automatically means mechanically, then no. And if it happens devotionally, because bhakti has become awakened, then you'd follow Raghunath Das Goswami, who was instructed by Srutamadar on this internal path of achieving prema. And you follow Srutamadar, and you follow Raghunath Das Goswami and those who have similarly applied this process, and there's progress. It may be gradual, because we have the anchor down. We have affinity for matter in different ways. And the affinity for matter starts with the sound vibrations we hear, according to Raghunath Das Goswami. And it makes sense. Desire arises from the sound vibrations we hear, or the other way, to cleanse, hear sound vibrations. And of course, hearing sound vibrations in a qualitative way, where, you know, the Adau Shraddha principle is active. And then when you do sadhu sangha and hearing spiritual sounds, it becomes awakened that desire, the Shraddha, means to connect, to come to know, or Brahma Jigyasa, inquisitive to know the absolute truth. So that's a life that's free from trouble. It's internal. And then when external trouble comes, it's not the same. That is to say, the happiness within overcomes all the troubles. And if we don't have that happiness within, troublesome experience of life. So not only is it easy, simple, natural for the soul, and free from trouble, but it is the only source of happiness for the human being. And then that's a nice topic. What's happiness? And the happiness is, in really simple language, is to know who you are. And to know who you are includes knowing what your relationship with Krishna is, because that's part of who we are. and back to this same topic. You know, bhakti is intrinsic or within the soul. It's our nature. And when we return to what is natural for us, that was one of the four, the first part of that sentence, it's natural for us, then we feel happiness. And there's a temporary sense of what happiness is that isn't what real happiness is. My thought is going to, in the course of visit in Florida, young couple, wife is pregnant, the mother of the son came to be around, to be in service for the her daughter-in-law. So I asked her, how are you feeling about being in America? Because her family, her place of birth was Guyana. She was honest. She said, I miss Guyana. How long do you plan to stay? She looked at her son and said, you know, shrugged her shoulders, I guess I'm going to stay here. You know, because her son's a citizen, so she'll become a citizen in America. And in her mind, she's thinking, Guyana. And in course of time, she'll think, you know, America, or the city that she's in. But that's all temporary, that's not her home. So to the sense of real happiness is to be in that atmosphere that's our home. You know, the back to Godhead phrase? Back home, back to Godhead. That's what real happiness is. And the aspiration is not just go geographically from this place to that place. It's the consciousness. It's the consciousness of being absorbed in what's natural for us, absorbed in bhakti, life, wherever. That's happiness. It's a very different definition than the material definition or the impersonal definition or even the yoga definition. It's still incomplete. The indirect processes are incomplete at best. They're not easy. They take a long time to reach the stage of perfection. Of course, to reach the stage of perfection in the bhakti process is also not a piece of cake. I heard that was the topic yesterday morning. The process of bhakti is not a snap of the fingers. It's not arduous, but it takes submission and perseverance and, you know, vritta-vratta, great determination and lots of mercy. But that direct process is the process of real happiness, happiness at the soul platform. That's back home, back to Godhead. We'll end there, see if there's some lively discussion. Yes, in the back.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, welcome, and thank you for the nice class. So you've given many explanations, descriptions as to why one's progress can be stagnant, that wanted of making progress. So I'm just wondering if this scenario is in any of those categories, that generally a devotee tend to say, well, I'm not making progress. But if we see that they have the determination to continue practicing,
yes,
is that a way of saying that, yes, they are making progress?
Yes. Thank you. And that was part of the answer that I gave yesterday. The very fact that you feel you're not making progress, but you're continuing to try to progress, that's progress. And Krishna will recognize. And so from our side, we can amplify, ramp up our effort and call for mercy. And we can keep doing that. there's other options. You can become complacent, you can become frustrated, you become disturbed or whatever it is. There's lots of other options, but if you continue with that, the answer to your, in response to your question is yes, that's progress. And one will progress further by that continued effort. But these two things always try to increase. In the effort department, don't become stagnant or complacent. In the effort department, I'm okay. And call for mercy with more reaching out and calling for mercy. How's that?
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much. A very clear answer.
Behind you?
Yeah, Maharaj. There's, originally, the Bhagavad Gita said that they're called Trivedi or Chaturvedi. The three Vedas were there, and ritualistic ceremonies were recommended and or worshipping various gods to achieve different accomplishments. But you're saying all these endeavors are considered useless or a waste of time. So why are they being offered and as an authority as from the Vedas to do these kind of things? To fulfill your desires, and at the ultimate end, it's all a waste of time.
Well, I've said it before, but I'll say it again. It's not a waste of time if it leads to progression. And if it doesn't lead to progression, it's a waste of time. Because waste of time, the definition of what's the proper use of time, is to reach the goal. The goal is not this or that. The goal is to reach the goal, reach to know Krishna. The purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. Supposing that is not part of the program, it's just ritualism. That's not a waste of time. However, the indirect processes, when connected with bhakti, can serve to help prepare one for becoming fully dedicated to bhakti. But there's no guarantee. But if it does make one more connected to bhakti, then it's not in the category of waste of time. Is that okay?
Okay.
Someone else? On the lady's side? Over the corner?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was thinking about that Akama Sarvakama Ba verse that you referenced, and it seems almost impossible. I mean, if you're full of material desire, or if you have the desire for liberation, just apply yourself one-pointedly to, you know, bhakti, but you said the definition of bhakti is to have no material desire, so it seems almost impossible. Can you explain?
Sure. I'm just waiting for you to conclude. Okay. In this world, there's those that want and those that want to be free from wants. That's everyone. And those that have either of those two categories, it's not that they're going to start with tibha bhakti, they're going to start with something. But those that make progress with the want or liberation desire, if they connect with bhakti, they can eventually come to tibha bhakti and then achieve perfection. There's the starting point and there's the transition. And there's the mature stage. So bhakti is the answer for those two categories. And it may, and if it does, come to the tibra bhakti stage, that's perfection. Someone else?
Yes, Maharaj, thank you. So our endeavor is one factor, and calling for mercy is the other.
Exactly.
I remember Gaura Govinda Swami would say these temples are crying schools. Yeah? You heard that?
I haven't.
Crying.
And I have heard several things during this visit in the Lajra that I never heard before. The backdoor key one is another one.
To bring out our crying in our chanting, in our crying for service for Krishna, you know.
Okay.
What prevents us from crying? What? Or?
Calling out, let's make it a little softer, calling out.
Yeah.
Pride? False ego? Mm-hmm. Sense of doership? In the strong sense of doership, false ego, I don't need help. I just have to apply myself vigorously, diligently. And young people are trained that way. Many are trained that way. Just to keep working hard. You can do it. And in parenting, that's part of, you know, how children learn that value. They just support and reinforce it. So it's just conditioning. Our material conditioning, false ego and doership. Those are two categories that probably further ones one could point to. I don't need help. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for coming here. And we really enjoyed your classes so much. They were so philosophical and stimulating to further thought and contemplation. I had one comment and one question. The comment was, I guess, in regards to the former comment before, when you were talking about the this idea of, well, we still have material desires, but you have to have no material desires to do bhakti. I was just thinking, I wish I could remember the source, which purport it was, but Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he said at one point, a sincere devotee is one whose desire for Krishna is stronger than his desire for Maya. In other words, material desire will be there, but our desire is stronger to want to obtain Krishna. So as long as we can keep that balance more towards trying to achieve Krishna's lotus feet, we're at least rightly situated. And so that was the comment. Question I had for you. This was just a kind of a factual question. You had mentioned doing a seminar based on Raghunath Das's work. I wasn't aware of that when it sounded fascinating about the internalization of Krishna consciousness. Do you know which works did you base that on, or could you tell us? I don't want the whole seminar right now.
The book is Manashiksha, and it's based upon Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on Manashiksha. Just quickly, in his commentary on Manashiksha, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that Sarup Damodar gave two paths, an exoteric and esoteric, an external and internal. And the exoteric he gave to Vrikreshwara Pandit, and then etc., etc. And in the esoteric, Sarup Damodar gave to Raghunath Das. And the writing of Manashiksha is the esoteric or the internal path of reaching the highest stage of bhakti. And so that's what he calls it, a padati, a step by step. Padati. So here's an online question, I guess. Is there any example of a grihastha devotee in our scriptures who struggled while dutiful performance of devotional service but achieved yenat masya prasidati stage? That was part one. How this stage feels while living in this material world? Well, it really, you know, easily reached example is our founder Acharya when he was a Grihastha, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who made this commentary on, you know, the Manushiksha and so many other 100 books. They went through troubles. It wasn't a cakewalk. In many ways, obstacles, in many ways. So that was this question here. And what is it? Does it feel like? Well, one acknowledges the material world is what it is, and one deals in practical terms with what it is. And internally, there is full faith in Krishna and the bhakti process. So you have something further, Vedavati? One more question and we're going to end. Oh, another question.
Thank you, Samaraj. It's actually a comment. You know how you were mentioning that going back home, back to Godhead, that home, it's not a geographical place.
That's right.
It's a consciousness. But what occurred for me when you were describing that, I actually remember at one point, like maybe 40 years ago, thinking, home is when I get out of the van with a roll of paintings under my arm. You know, it was like, because I was earning money for the temple. And then last night when we were celebrating Gaurhari's life, I had gotten in touch with people who used to live at Gitanagari when he was there. And that was such a home, such a feeling of community. And then last night, the celebration itself, or the memorial for Gaurhari, so many devotees and his family, you know, it was just like, it really felt like this is a family, this is a community. There's so many varieties. There's humor, there's, you know, his business acumen, so many funny, yeah, anyway, it really felt like home. And I thought how Prabhupada has made these temples outposts for learning to cry and learning to laugh and learning to care about one another, which is like practice. So I just wanted to thank you for mentioning consciousness in relation to home.
Thank you. You did a wonderful job as the MC. No one, like, you know, said rah rah. You did a great job. Because your heart was in it. This devotee in the green shirt has something. And we're going to, this is our last point. You have? Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a wonderful class. My question is on Karma Yoga and the Bhakti Yoga. So, the way I understand Karma Yoga is, whatever you are doing, yet karoshi, you know, offer to Krishna and forget about it.
And
you know, just don't, you know, forget about it means, you know, you don't expect any results or any outcome of it. You just offer it like what Arjuna did. He fought for Krishna and, you know, he didn't care whether he's going to win or not win. That's how I understood Karma Yoga is. And Bhakti Yoga, as I understand, is the direct process, coming to temple and offering and all that. So, is Karma Yoga same as Bhakti Yoga? These are two different things.
Nice question. Two things, two responses to your... The preamble is Sakama and Nishkam Karma Yoga. There's divisions. And the second is, one can say Karma Yoga is a subset of Bhakti Yoga. Within Bhakti Yoga is already accomplished Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga doesn't necessarily reach the Bhakti Yoga stage, because Bhakti Yoga stage is the mature stage, or the mature stage of work. It connects with what Prabhupada is saying here. These are not independent. So your question was, are these the same? And my reply specifically is, one is dependent and the other is independent. One is not independent. Karma Yoga is not independent. It's dependent. And bhakti, shuddha bhakti, para bhakti, is independent fully. It's not dependent. The subset is included. What it doesn't need to strive for it separately, provided no expectation of gain. There may be an expectation of, I want freedom from the bondage. I'm doing karma yoga because I'm... Bhakti is, there's no mix.
Yes, with one difference is, in karma yoga, you are not expecting anything, but you are not also not expecting the prema, Krishna prema. You don't know about the Krishna prema, whether you're going to get it or not get it. You're just doing your job, you're offered to Krishna, and
well,
that's it.
Well, maybe you want freedom from bondage, or moksha. You know, so your premise, your conception of what karma yoga is, it's not just a bucket, it's a whole spectrum. The principle is detached work, and then there's different stages of detached work. When it comes to the stage that you're describing, then it's bhakti. Until it comes to that stage, there's a mix. There's bhakti with some expectation up to, I want freedom from bondage, thus karma yoga. So I'm offering because I have an expectation. And bhakti is where that expectation isn't there. There's only one thing. That's shuddha. Okay? Think of it as a spectrum, not just a bucket.
Thank you.
So Maharaj.
Okay, I'm on a hot seat
now. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami Pada explained that sadhana bhakti includes, pure bhakti, shuddha bhakti includes sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti.
Yes, correct.
So the devotee goes through their practice.
Yes.
The real sadhana or real pure bhakti cannot sustain by COVID tribulation or mental emotion, but it sustained by the conviction, determination.
Yes.
In my own life I reflect. And so, but to sustain that, when I say that, okay, it is by conviction and determination, there is a decision.
There
happiness in decision.
There's a decision?
Happiness in decision. That I want to progress. I feel happy about it.
Good.
So there is a happiness in, also there is a happiness in emotion, happiness in benediction. So all these things together, devotees are happy.
I agree.
Okay.
No disagreement. How can we disagree with Rupa Goswami and Pran Govinda? How can we disagree? Srila Prabhupada ki?
Okay.